We believe as Europeans in a global market and trade and collaboration, and that's so good. But if you focus and concentrate your supply in various areas onto a single suppliers, it's simply not smart. So the smart solution is to diversify. Do not put all your eggs into one basket. That's the first thing you learn if you want to run a business.
My name is Patrick Hübscher, and this is Circularity FM, the podcast about understanding, building, and managing circular business models.
Welcome to a new series of Circularity FM. This one is a special from IFAT. IFAT is the world's leading trade fair for environmental technologies. And I can tell you, it's massive. More than 3,000 exhibitors, many visitors, and a fully packed program. We had a hard time choosing highlights, and we picked four. And these four we want to share with you. We kick off with the topic of resilience and sovereignty. More details in a minute. After that, we will look into the economic potential of circularity. Then we have a deep dive on startups. Circular Republic will present its Startup Landscape 2026, and we will discuss the background. And for the final episode, we will combine all the three previous topics: resilience, economics, and startups. We will highlight the winners from the Circular Technology Award in the categories Automated Disassembly and Critical Raw Materials. The first stop in this episode is the Circular Sovereignty Forum. This has been hosted by Circular Republic, the Ellen MacArthur Foundation, and IFAT Munich. We will hear perspectives from Susanne Kattner, co-founder of Circular Republic, Joao Merico from Ellen MacArthur Foundation, and Roland Gauss from EIT Raw Materials. The topic of sovereignty is a wide one. It includes geopolitics, economics, of course, circularity, policy instruments, and many more. So let's dive into this conversation. Let's start with Susanne. Susanne, we're at the IFAT here, and you host the Circular Sovereignty Forum. Why did you initiate that?
Well, the IFAT, you just mentioned it, is the world's largest environmental technology fair, and we think it's the perfect place to showcase what kind of innovative potential we already have in Germany, we already have in Europe, because it's this innovative potential that we need if you really want to make this transformation towards a circular economy in reality. And many of those technologies here are already what we need today to improve, for example, the recycling aspect within the circular economy, but then also addressing other issues in robotics for automated disassembly. So there's a whole host of innovative ideas that's being showcased. And that's why having the Circular Sovereignty Forum here is the perfect spot for us.
Wonderful. About 2 years ago, the European Commission released the Critical Raw Materials Act. And later this year, there will be the Circular Economy Act. So you talk to a lot of companies. What are their expectations towards the European Commission?
Yeah. I mean, we brought out a policy paper which is trying to answer exactly that. And what comes out most from it is that they want clarity. So the end of waste definition, for example, accelerated permitting, they want speed. The transparency aspect is clear. How do we calculate benefits that come from recycled content, for example, scope 3 emissions that have been saved? It's been an important topic that was discussed here today. But what's most of all important for them is the predictability, that regulations which have been planned are not being taken away or reformed through omnibus, for example. They want to know that if they're first movers, they can win and they will not lose.
We heard today someone saying necessity is driving innovation. And when we talk about critical raw materials and geopolitical dimensions, we always have this tension between the nation state perspective and companies. Companies are a bit more flexible, at least in the long term, because they can relocate their operations. So how can a body like the European Union actually also innovate and try to make companies move into the circular economy?
Yeah, that's a very important point. I mean, we are at Circular Republic, located at Europe's largest entrepreneurship center. And specifically for the young companies, it's very interesting to go abroad, to go to the US, where the finance streams are not comparable to what we see in Europe or in Germany. So that's one thing. Make sure that the money is there for the innovative companies being able to scale. That's one aspect. The other point is there are many companies who want to stay within Europe, who want to stay within Germany. And here, what's really important is make it easier for them to make their business model work. And that sort of relates back to the question we just discussed, you know, have the predictability of how you're going to set up your business model. Because, yeah, as a company, you have the flexibility to go abroad, but that's also linked to a risk, of course, because what if environmental or regulations change, like we have seen in the US? If the ground there suddenly is not so fitting for your business model anymore? At least here you know how it is. But here we have to guarantee the predictability as well. So we have this competitive advantage compared to other areas.
Yeah. And at the same time, we're seeing already, luckily, companies that are moving in that direction. So they set up circular business models, they change their supply chains to become more resilient, more circular. While at the same time, companies within the same industry that have more or less the same preconditions, they stick to a more linear approach. So what separates the front runners from the companies that are a bit more hesitant?
I mean, one thing, and that sort of adds on to the last question, I wanted to mention this as well. It's the strategic aspect. We see that investments, venture money is being redirected to Europe because of the sort of changing environments that we've seen in the US, the IRA that was put in place under Biden. So the IRA provided a lot of positive ground for innovative companies in the green tech space to flourish. And now this is being taken away. And we see that a lot of investments are now flowing into the European Union. So the credibility by investors to what the European Union can establish is there. And that's a very important signal. So coming to the question that you've just asked, why are some companies front runners? Why are they not? I think it sort of depends on where they are standing. Some have given themselves a clear circularity target some years ago, maybe due to regulation, impending regulation, and they are trying to understand how to make this real. And over the course of this process, the geopolitical landscape has changed, and they are really seeing now how important this is to remain in control of your own material value streams. And that very often is linked to a changing business model as well. So for these companies, they were front runners, but they're seeing that they are actually benefiting from this. Despite maybe the fact that European regulation is not really rewarding them for it, but for them, remaining or retaining the control of their really high value material streams is paramount. So for them, it's very interesting. And for the other companies who are not following suit, some of them are waiting for Brussels to decide what comes first, you know, what do you need to adhere to or not anymore? And then they can only be reactive. It's their decision.
Today, we experienced 2 hours of intensive exchange and discussion. What's your takeaway from today's event?
Well, my takeaway is this old saying, you can only do it together. But I like what the Ellen MacArthur Foundation brought into this discussion. We are talking about sovereignty, but we need to talk about sovereignty and collaboration at the same time. And so being here today, having these different companies in the room together with politics, we are all driven by the same questions. I've mentioned it. It's clarity, it's transparency, but it's the act, the need to act as well. And that's really sort of like this positive energy that I'm taking away.
Susanne, thanks for facilitating this collaboration.
Thank you so much.
Joao, you co-hosted this session today. Why is this such an important topic for the Ellen MacArthur Foundation?
Critical minerals is an extremely important subject at the moment. We're going to experience a very high demand stemming from energy transition and mobility transition, digital transition. We have circular economy at the very core of that transition. So resources are designed to be kept in the economy, to be reused, to be made as productive as possible, creating value, but at the same time, reducing any negative impacts you can have. So we need to transition to a global circular economy for that matter.
And what are the strategies that are available to achieve the goals you just mentioned?
One of the main strategies that are being currently discussed all over the world is the need to increase recycling of these critical minerals, which is absolutely key strategy and way forward, particularly because in these minerals, we're able to have high rates of recycling back compared to other sectors of the economy, right? Some of these minerals can be recycled again and again. However, recycling will not solve the whole thing. It's not the full picture. We do need a diverse set of circular business models beyond recycling as well. Sharing models, leasing and rental, like product as a service, material as a service, and etc. to make sure we increase the durability of these products in the economy, ensure they can be repaired, reused, remanufactured, and eventually recycled at scale and global.
the topic of critical raw materials mostly comes down to the specific materials. So how can like a reuse model really work considering the fast innovation cycles that maybe the kind of permanent magnet that was state of the art last year may not be the one next year, and reusing that you won't bring you in a competitive position?
Yeah, that is a very good point. And it is an issue the industry is facing. The technology is evolving, and it's an issue not only for reuse, but it's an issue for recycling as well. The materials that are going to be available post-recycling in the future may not be the ones that are most demanded in the future as well. So it's an issue that we have to manage. On the battery side, for example, a solution for that is once an EV battery reaches the end of its life, it can be applied to stationary batteries. And that might be a very cost-effective and profitable way to maintain the product in circulation before you can recycle and avoid the need to create a whole new battery for stationary storage, for example. So we can rely on these strategies and also design new solutions that help us maintain this battery circulation, because the wasteful way you're currently doing the economy is surely bound to fail and be more costly in the right time. So we have to develop new ways of engaging with these materials that they become assets to be managed over the long term rather than disposable products.
Yeah. When you describe these circular initiatives, do you separate between, let's say, a global circular economy where from a worldwide view, we keep resources in the loop, and a more, let's say, regional circular economy? Because considering the current geopolitical discussions, it seems as though there is a circular economy in North America, in Europe, in Asia, on other continents. And some regions are trying to set up their own kind of semi-ring fence circular economy. I mean, you're working together with global companies around the world. So how do you view that movement or this trend to come up with more regional focused circular economy? Or is that even the case?
Yeah, we need both. We need local efforts and local innovation and global cooperation. This is a massive issue. The demand for critical minerals increased by over 3.5, nearly quadrupling. So no region can do it by itself. Also, no region can do it without local efforts. So we need both. We need better global cooperation that results in win-win positions for everybody. I think that's where the circular economy also can lead the way and ensure that we hit the right spot between local innovation, local initiatives, and global cooperation. Win-win scenario.
You mentioned the climate ambition. My last question is about that, because right now, in the last 1 or 2 years, circular economy has been framed more as an instrument to come up with resilient economy and so resilient business practices. To what extent is it still delivering on climate and sustainability goals?
Yeah, the circular economy will be absolutely key to deliver on climate goals. On climate, we have a major need to reduce emissions, reduce our fossil fuel consumption, right? But that alone is not the full picture. If we don't change how we extract, use, and dispose of our products, if we don't change that linear process, we're not going to hit our climate goals. So if we're going to aim for doing a renewable energy transition that's still linear in creating solar panels and wind turbines and batteries, that will still cause enormous environmental impact, that will still have a lot of emissions from manufacturing, emissions that are hard to abate sectors from cement and chemicals that need circular practices to actually hit net zero. The energy transition can take us only so far, and the circular economy can complete that image and can bring us to true net zero in a resilient value chain. Yeah.
Joao, thanks for hosting this event today and your comments on it.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for having us. Really appreciate it.
Roland, Europe is gifted by raw materials, but not really extracting it. What is holding Europe back to use the raw materials we have?
Well, when we say Europe has raw materials, we have primary raw materials, but we also have a bunch of secondary raw materials in our urban mines, as we call it. Yeah, and there's much more material you could extract. And for some reason, over the years, we rather started to focus on downstream manufacturing and kind of left this upper part of the value chain, this extraction posting business, to other places in the world that kind of systematically invested here. I think we just lost it a little bit out of sight, and now it reoccurs as a strategic matter. How do you secure access to those most important raw materials that you need for all kinds of manufacturing? And I think it's a matter of commitment, willingness, social acceptance in specific regions. It comes with investment costs. It comes with certain environmental burdens. However, many people don't know that actually Europe is a home of the world leading most sustainable mining and processing technology companies. So if there's a place where we could sustainably extract materials, it's here.
You mentioned one of the key levers to achieve that is a level playing field. Why is this such an important topic
Well, you know, I'm an innovation director. I believe in innovation. Innovation is driven by competition. And if you want to have, you know, the best solution, the most innovative solution, you need to have the best players compete. And particularly in raw materials sector, we face the challenge that in some places in the world, there's a lot of, let's say, state subsidies coming into the business, a preferential treatment of electricity costs, access to human capital resources, conditions you don't have, for instance, in Europe these days. Or if you look at the latest US investments in the rare earth business, large public-private commitments, real dollars going into the business, attracting European smart minds to come over and invest in the US, then you don't have the same kind of level playing field to deploy the technology and the knowledge we have.
So it seems as when you talk about level playing field, it's more a matter of financial incentive or how much am I willing to invest as a country
to secure these as a state, but also as a company to diversify, risk diversify. The U.S. administration installed in several instances even tax schemes at the border, something we Europeans don't like because we believe in a global trade. Right. But on the other hand, it does protect certain metallurgical industries in the U.S. It's one measure. The other is specific VAT tax schemes or incentives to trigger industrial installations in the U.S. There's also a clever combination of offtake provided by private companies as well as public authorities. If you consider a Department of Defense in investments in military equipment and security supplies. So it's kind of a clever combination of making companies these days decide to scale in other places than Europe.
Right.
And here we need to come forward with a much more clever approach. Let's put it this way. In Europe, we do see some individual businesses that still kind of make their way. But I think when it comes to European industrial ambitions and industrial policy, we need to become much better.
Yeah. One thing is the regulatory environment and the decisions by the state. The other thing is the demand from the companies itself. There are companies that invest in long-term, circular, resilient supply chains. And there are other companies that are frequently shocked when a certain supply is blocked. And then after a couple of months, they go back to business as usual. We need the demand of the second group as well to scale up.
That's the majority, by the way.
Yeah. But how can we win this majority for long-term circular solutions?
Well, first of all, to make people really aware of the topic and the key decision-making levels. You know, as also presented earlier, we have these raw materials in Europe. We can commit. We have the best people to process these materials. It's a matter of commitment and it's a matter of risk management. It boils down to investment and risk management. Of course, we believe as Europeans in a global market and trade and collaboration, and that's so good. But if you focus and concentrate your supply in various areas onto a single suppliers, it's simply not smart. So the smart solution is to diversify. Do not put all your eggs into one basket. That's the first thing you learn if you want to run a business. So diversify, do collaborate with global partners. That's so important, but still ensure a certain degree of diversity in your supply chains. Do invest also in local or nearshore suppliers. And this gives you much more flexibility. And also, you know, if you think in future designs of your products, you want to have people that know about materials that best design your products.
Yeah.
So you don't want to send this product designs all around the world, right? You want to work with trusted partners and then you end up with a diversified supply.
Roland, thanks for sharing your perspective.
Okay, thanks.
This was the first episode in our IFAD special. The next episode will move from geopolitics to economics. We will look at the economic potential of circularity. Until then, let's make sure to drive a profitable circular economy. And please don't forget, your most abundant renewable resource is your imagination.
My name is Patrick Hübscher, and this is Circularity FM, the podcast about understanding, building, and managing circular business models.